Yeah,
so
okay.
You forget and you stand up.
Yes, okay. Oh, that's better.
And help yourself to...
Thanks very much.
Right now.
I'm not sure that... Is that working? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fine, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. That's fine. Just arrived.
Sorry.
Despite the rail services?
Yeah, they said one carriage was on fire north of, I think they said, initially they said there were sparks coming from the track, so they stopped all trains north of Wolverhampton and then sent me to Chester. I came from Banbury in Oxfordshire. And then they sent us to Chester because they said at least we're moving north, and we stopped there. So I was supposed to be here at 4:30, and apologies to Victoria and the previous to Ian as well, because they've all been knocked out of sync. I was supposed to be first on, but now I've got this one.
Well, you're here, and that's the
thank you.
Thing,
thank
I'm
you. Thank you very much, Simon. So my understanding is 10 minutes, and it's 20 years since I left at Fylde College. So I was thinking if it's 10 minutes, I've got to do 30 seconds a year, which could be quite a challenge. And I was slightly nervous about it. I thought this could be a bit strange. And then my wife said, well, it is your specialist subject. And I didn't know quite how to take that. But I think it was meant in a positive way. So it did all begin here for me in Fylde College. And I met my business partner, Steve, who was in Grisdale. And miraculously, despite that, we were friends and continue to be. We met doing the same course, which was visual arts and marketing. And it was a very niche course that, ironically, given that it was all about communication, I think the course broke up pretty much 2 or 3 years after our cohort had finished. But it was a good course. There were only about 6 of us, and I'd chosen it because I had an interest in art, but I wanted to couple that with a commercial element. So it was in about the second year that Steve Turner and I thought, well, you know, what about if we left here and we set up a graphic design house? And that's basically what we started to prepare to do. So we were just on the edge of Apple Macs coming into play, and we both bought these Quadra 610s, which were like sort of pizza box shape, and we tried to do a little bit in our own time. And when we left, it's a whole different story, but we sold books in the States on a course for 3 months, but I'll tell you about that another time. And then we set up actually from my mum's house in a village called Wickham in Portsmouth. And my mum at the time was a physiotherapist, and she had a spare treatment room. And she was going off at the age of 50 to do a fine art degree. So she said, we can have this room. So we took that. We didn't have any money. We didn't really know what we were doing. But we still thought it was a good idea. And people were saying, well, this is brave. And we just felt we didn't really have anything to lose. So why not give it a go? We applied for a startup grant that was available there and at that time. And that gave us £40 a week each for 6 months, which we gave directly to my mum, and we set about trying to generate some interest. I can remember that the one of the first clients, it was quite funny, with a pair of us went to the local village hairdressers because she'd expressed an interest in wanting to have an ad in the parish magazine. So Steve and I turned up in suits with clipboards and asked about target audiences and objectives and long-term goals and all these sorts of things. I think she was a bit bemused by it, but we looked professional, didn't seem to mind. And then we went back to our office at my mum's house and flipped a coin to see who would call this hairdresser up and tell her it was going to be two hours time at £15 an hour. Neither of us thought, you know, we thought that she's never going to go for that. And Steve had to call, and she said yes, and we're like, brilliant, we're off. So we kind of we tick that off, and things started to roll a bit during that time. And after about a year, we kind of got to the point where we needed a proper office space. And basically, my mum had enough of us living there, which was understandable. So we moved to Chipping Norton, which is where we are now. We Again, we were kind of, the first year in terms of finances, I think we turned over £25,000 and we were delighted with that. But we went to see our bookkeeper and she said, are you sure you've made the right decision here? And we're like, this is great, this is from nothing. So we kept plugging away and we moved to Chipping Norton. We had we rented some office space there at a very low rent in exchange for effectively doing it up at weekends and evenings. And we've just gone through a sort of steady growth process, and now we're still there. It remains a pretty, it's central enough for us. We're in premises that we bought from Ronnie Barker, of all people. So there's a nice bit of history to our studio. And quite a bit's changed and quite a bit hasn't. We've basically evolved. So we started very much as a graphic design house. We've got bigger, clients have got bigger, propositions become broader. We've got more people. We're not huge. We're about 17, 18 people. But perhaps the thing that hasn't changed, and this is probably quite a good thing to understand, we had a kind of a bit of a philosophy from the outset, and for us, design was always about solving marketing problems, using design to solve marketing challenges, and we coined an expression, the idea is king and delivery rules, and it really was the recognition that actually you need to have a really good idea at the outset, but actually that idea lives or dies by how it's delivered. So you need both parts, and quite often, and this, because we'd never worked anywhere else and we didn't know any different, we thought this is probably pretty much par for the course, but it turned out it was quite different to be able to really develop the strategic piece at the outset and then see that through to delivery. So whilst in the very early days, that was the delivery piece was just about print. What's happened is, as we've evolved into effectively a sort of brand design consultancy, the delivery piece remains, but it's now about which channels we use, how do we play them to their strengths, etc. So it's something that we kind of remind ourselves of. It's emblazoned across our wall, and it works quite well. So we're now at that 20-year. Point, which is quite scary, and I think one of the things is I found is you don't always take time to reflect. But we hit 20 years, and we thought actually that's as good a time as any. So we one of the things we did was to set up. We decided we wanted to do 20 things in our 20th year, which was a bit ambitious, and I'm not sure we're quite going to get there actually. But they're a complete mix of stuff, from stuff with the team, we identified various charities we wanted to do work with. We've done some fun stuff, Tough Mudders, just a whole bunch of things in recognition of where we've got to, because it has been, I don't think we're not an example of a business that has just, you know, rocketed over 20 years, you know, to be at 18 people. It's not big, but then size isn't really our ambition, but it's been steady. So there's plenty that I'm proud of, and actually thinking when we were asked to do this, that was when I started to think, actually, what might those things be? And they're a real mix. I mean, there's things like, I guess we've been fortunate enough, bar mortgages, never to have any debt. We've made a consistent profit. But I think the biggest thing is that mark makers, past and present, the company's called Mark Making, by the way, I probably should have said that, it's on there. And incidentally, that comes from, that's another Lancaster connection. So on the visual arts course, one of the modules was called mark making, which is a reference to the act of making marks, and we thought that would work quite nicely for a brand design agency. And it seems to have stood the test of time. But we've had award success. But I think probably the biggest thing is seeing. We've had a lot of people with us for a long time. We've also had a lot of churn recently, but we've seen people absolutely kind of blossom, and that's been particularly rewarding. We've remained fairly consistently, we entered the Design Week top 100 design agencies about 5 years ago, which was always a kind of a goal of ours. And when we were here, we remember seeing that as a kind of that would be a nice target when we were, you know, sitting in lectures and being made aware of different designers and design histories. So that's been really good. We set up something called Project Pledge, which it was basically a pro bono initiative that used it, and still does, any downtime studio capacity. So we just identified, not necessarily charities, but organisations or individuals who we thought were trying to do something decent, different, and could really help with some, do with some expertise. So if we had the time available, we just assigned it and we packaged it and we set up a website where we try and encourage other people to do the same. So we're trying to kind of different things outside of the core business. I think probably one of the biggest challenges has been, it's very, very competitive. It's a fun industry to work in, but it's very, very competitive, and propositions need to kind of evolve all the time, and there's lots of businesses doing very similar things. So we've had moments where I think we've become distracted and we've maybe broadened our proposition out in a way that in hindsight we shouldn't have. It was answering some needs of our clients, but ultimately they were kind of peripheral roles. I mean, our core focus, what we're all about essentially, is helping businesses and organizations really understand what they're all about and why anyone should care about that, and then helping them express that in the most effective way, and primarily through design in our case. But when we've added on other services that our clients have wanted, it's worked, but they haven't necessarily been roles that have been sustainable from a kind of utilization and financial perspective. And I think one of the things I've been proud of, particularly this year, it's been a transformational year in many ways, because I think we've had to make a lot of HR decisions that maybe historically we would have shied away from. So I think, because it's quite difficult sometimes to make decisions, you're worrying what the rest of the team might think, you're worrying how it might be perceived. What we've been quite general about this, but what we've kind of discovered is, and realised quite quickly as a result of it, when you put the business first and the people within the business first, and you make these decisions that are quite tough to make, maybe somebody's just not performing and you've spoken to them and you've tried to make it work, but it's not going to work, and you realise that it's not somebody you can continue employing, you make that call. Everyone's a little bit unsettled by it. But then a number of people will come up to you later and say, actually, yeah, that person was a really, really good guy, but I totally understand why you did that, because it wasn't benefiting the whole. So it's taken 20 years to get to that point. But that's something I'm quite proud of, because the result has been this year, after we have had a bit of churn, more churn probably in the past 18 months from a staffing perspective than we've had in the previous 20 years. But we now have such a good team with so much potential and so much opportunity. It feels so much better. And I did a one-to-one with one of our young copywriters just last Friday. And again, you have this perception of what's going on. But the first thing she said was, "I really like these guys." And she said, "But it feels so good now. It feels so much more settled, the dynamics better, everything." And you realise that everybody senses it, and sometimes you have to make those decisions. So in terms of where next, I think this year we've learnt so much. It's been tough on the one hand. Steve, my business partner, I think he said it's just felt like the worst year ever. But I've tried to say, well, but look how far we've come individually, actually, as leaders, and look kind of what we've got now. And I think we've become even more focused in terms of where we go from here. And really, we have a vision, a documented vision, and it's useful in some respects. But it's not always that practical. So we're now starting to look slightly less far ahead, and thinking, actually, where do we want to be? What do we want the business to look like at the end of 2016, at the end of 2018? And all the things that we constantly think about, we could be addressing the ways we work. We need to work on the development of the people. We need to look at new business. All these things that come at you in a sort of ad hoc manner and at times just become overwhelming. We've kind of settled down a bit now and thought, well, let's just be really realistic about this. Let's figure it out as a plan. But I think the breakthrough moment has been, actually, let's put some practical and realistic milestones in, so actually we get a sense of progress. And for me, that progress thing, is a massive motivator. It's like you just to feel that you're making headway. I don't want to look back in 5 years and think we're kind of at the same point. And it doesn't mean we have to be bigger. It just things have to be different. They have to have changed. They have to be better in some respect. Thanks, Simon. 2 minutes. I'm finding that quite exciting because I think after 20 years, you know, you try and retain a level of energy, but inevitably there's an ebb and flow to that. But I think we've definitely got it back. And I just think the way that the team, the mark makers are now, we've got a real opportunity to kind of capitalise on that. There was a question about priorities, or one of the pointers that we were asked about in advance. They haven't really changed. I'm much more conscious of, I don't think of it as work-life balance, I think it was home-life balance, because I think what the journey we've been on basically is a life's work, haven't worked anywhere else. But I've got two young children, and it's more about, I think if you get the balance right, both elements benefit, and I've become more and more conscious of that. So you have to kind of structure your time accordingly. I think in terms of, you know, this is about startup stories and doing your own thing. I think there's so many ways in which it's rewarding. Neither Steve or I are really financially motivated. You know, it's good to see figures going in the right direction, and we have been fortunate there. But I think for me, it's been in our industry, you get to work with so many different types of businesses. So you're learning all the time, and you can apply your understandings of those businesses to other businesses. I think you can't underestimate the value of autonomy, and I think just having, you know, being a master of your own direction, even when it feels pretty tough at times. But you know, that I've had conversations with my wife, who works in the NHS, and I think, God, you know, actually, you've got issues that are totally beyond your control that I don't have to deal with, which actually is quite nice. Yeah, I have to deal with clients, I have to deal with staff, and but at least there's no one really making things awkward in any particular way. So all those things are really, really good. The bad news probably is that I don't think there's any shortcut. I think, you know, it is hard work, and it's consistently hard work. but the trade-off is definitely worth it. And when we started, our strap line was blood, sweat and ideas since 1995. And I think when we kind of came up with that, which a lot of people seem to like, because it does say quite a lot about what we do, we never really appreciated actually how much the first part of that would come true. And because I think students sometimes, well, when I was a student, I loved a freebie. I've got a bunch of these, if anyone wants one. It's a sweatband, blood, sweat and ideas. There you go. I've got a job lot left over from that. Thank you very much. Thank you. Cheers. Thank you. Okay, yeah, fire away.
If anybody, here we go. Yes. I have two questions.
Okay.
First, can you remind me what your business is?
Yes, sorry. So the business name is Mark Making. Mark Making, that's the name of the company. We started life as a graphic design agency, and now we're, you'd probably describe it as an integrated brand design agency. Okay. Quite tricky to articulate, but basically we help a lot of businesses really get to the nub of what they're all about, what do they stand for as a business, and then armed with that understanding, with that sort of clarity and that focus, we look at their brand identity. So beyond just their logo, you know, all the verbal visual elements, even the way they behave at times, to ensure that they're expressing an authentic and effective representation of that.
Yes. Second thing is, I hear many investors say that ideas is important, but
yeah,
it doesn't have any money in it. The money comes from the implementation.
Yeah,
that's where you can sell.
That's that's really pertinent at the moment, because we just had a year where we were really pleased with the number of the amount of new business we've had, which is around the stuff that we really, really like doing, which is that brand definition piece, helping get clarity. We've got kind of processes to do it, but we don't have to start with that. We can kind of jump in at any point on the journey. But what we've recognized is that for our base level bread and butter, to have that base level earnings, we need that implementation. That's where the repeat work comes from. Occasionally you get a really nice start from scratch ID project, but they're few and far between. And actually, I think across the, as an industry, the value has decreased, particularly with the rise of digital.
Yes, yeah, I was wondering how you reach your customers, and maybe how did you reach when you first started?
Yeah. Okay. So that's a good question, because one of the things that was asked on the original notes was, do you think there had been anything transformational to your business had it existed when you started? And obviously the big thing that now exists is the internet. And at the time, I think we did have internet access. We'd look at our kind of shared email at the end of the day. Nothing ever comes in. But I kind of think had that been available at the time, we wouldn't have just gone for it in the same way. I think there would have been that sort of an analysis paralysis. We would have had so much research at our fingertips. I don't think we would have done anything. So in terms of actually how we reached customers at that point, in those early days, we literally just put out mail shots. We targeted PR companies who we thought might benefit from having a design arm, or have, you know, be asked by their clients for design work. Now, I mean, we have grown primarily through recommendation and referral, and part of this next push we talk about it every year, this is the year we're going to do it, we do it for our clients, is to get a more effective, more structured new business program in place. But primarily it is recommendation and referral and networking.
John, yes.
Hi, John.
Blood, sweat,
ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But two, what sort of values in clients really turn you off?
Oh, turn us off. Okay, so does blood, sweat, and ideas represent? Yeah, it really does, actually. I think, you know, when thinking about what I might say tonight, it was, you know, one of the things was that idea of actually there isn't a shortcut. You just have to keep going. And actually, in recognition of the blood piece, is one of the 20 things that we're doing this year. Collectively, we're giving 20 pints of blood. so there's the whole gamut of stuff that we're doing there. And ideas, yeah, is very much at the heart of it. In terms of what turns me off in clients, would have been the frustrations of late. I mean, one thing I, again, maybe it's taken a long time to realise this, but In recent years, I think I'd always had this impression that the more senior a person within a client organisation, you know, they've got there through skills, expertise, empathy, interpersonal skills, all these things, and then actually realised that possibly they haven't got there. they've got there a different way, and we've become more aware of actually how you might be working with people who perhaps aren't as good in their role as you thought they might have been. But fundamentally, our clients are really good across the board, and I think that we work well with them because there's definitely a mutual respect. I think if that respect piece drops away, then that is a turn off.
Yes, please.
Just following on from that, yeah.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
Just share what you're trying to say about how society has changed and the industry has really changed. And I imagine you employ a lot of women as well.
Yeah, we do, actually. We do.
I'm just wondering how you feel after that when you look at a series like that.
Yeah. It's so far removed from... But I think not just from today, but from us specifically. I think because we started out having not worked anywhere else, I don't know whether it's been a double-edged sword. On the one hand, we had no preconceptions of what the industry was like. So part of our vision is it's to build a reputation for creative effectiveness, creative excellence, creative excellence, design effectiveness, a lack of ego, and being a great place to work. And the lack of ego bit just came from anecdotal feedback from clients who said, this is a bit weird. Where are the pretensions? Where's the preciousness? Why aren't you being arrogant? And we just never appreciated that there was, certainly, I think it has moved on a lot from that, but it still exists. There's big egos in advertising. So it feels like it's a million miles away, but we did have one guy, actually, who's recently moved on, who definitely should have been in that era. Yeah, it is.
Or would you never do that? You mentioned staying at a certain time?
Yeah, I think the way we've always looked at it is that if we can, what we're focusing on now is producing the highest quality work we can, which we've always done, and that's the design effectiveness and creative excellence piece. But then being as well run a business as we possibly can, because that translates to being a great place to work. And I think if we get those things right, we've always taken the view that we're in no rush. You know, if somebody came along, it would be interesting, but we're working towards being a marketable, a purchasable business, just because that is a good business. Whether we'd ever sell out, I don't know. It would be a really tough call. We've got quite a strong culture, and you know, the team are called Mark Makers, and that's not something we've imposed. That's how they refer to themselves, and you know, people who've left, and that would be a tough decision. And I've sort of shifted. I did used to think, oh, that would be quite cool. You know, maybe you could make a lump sum there. But then I kind of wondered what. Could it live on beyond us? Could we kind of keep adapting, keep evolving, and have a legacy?
Thank you. So I would just like to ask you a question based on some of the things we see around us. Working with students who come to us with ideas. And a lot of students recognise that there's a need for a designer in the team. Now, that's not necessarily a graphic designer, but a design thinker.
Yeah.
And I just wondered to what extent you felt there was some crossover between, say, things you needed as an emerging entrepreneur, mm-hmm. and somebody who thinks in the way that a designer thinks.
I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think if you look at Apple as probably the best example, you know, I think a lot of people say it's not necessarily the best technology. You know, there are plenty of, but because they've thought so hard about the design piece. They just created a super desirable brand as a result. And a friend of mine works in Zurich. He's sort of biomechanics, works on these and joints. And they've developed a product, a pressure sensor seat pad that they think could be really useful for research, but also for businesses and staff well-being. So it monitors how you're sitting and your posture analysis, so that actually, you know, people are within the working environment are being taken care of. And he asked me if we could do a logo, which is fine because that often is the perception. We need a logo. That's it. And I was thinking, you've got an amazing product here, but look at the competitors who are touching it, that industry, and look how much they're thinking about how they're taking that idea and then really bringing it to life and really making it engaging. Because these, my friend and his crew, you know, they're all very bright guys. That, you know, and very, very technical, but they perhaps don't have that broader design awareness. But if you can merge the two, I think that's when you get amazing results.
Thanks.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
You have the hot seat.
Yeah, great. It's warm, isn't it? There you go.
Invite Dave to come up. Thank you, Dave. Sorry, I'm saying Dave. David. Which you prefer? Dave, you prefer. Thank goodness for that. And I will clip this on. Thus. If you could give us a word.
Hi. Okay.
Is that coming out?
You can get it.
Coming out of the speakers?
Yeah,
I
voice.
Think so.
Yeah, right.
I'll
okay.
Put that in your hand. Right. So
okay.
Without further ado.